Hey guys, my name is Alex, and you're listening to the Thousand Movie Project podcast. I bought a book about Satan this morning because I was on Reddit. I fell into a rabbit hole of reading the posts of this guy who, his username, it had a little bit of flair underneath it, a little credential. And what the credential said was PhD in religious studies, and the dude seemed to know what he was talking about. In particular, I was reading his comments about, I forget what the thread was discussing specifically, but he was saying that when you read the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible, it talks about Adam and Eve eating the fruit from the tree of knowledge. And here in the West, we tend to think about that fruit as an apple, even though there is no part of the text that specifies it was an apple. The text just says it was a fruit. But something this guy was encouraging people to keep in mind is that up until fairly recently, it wasn't all that common for anyone to be literate. So most of these Bible stories, like the way they got around, number one, it was from like preaching and conversation and Bible groups. Number two, though, like reading the Bible's number three, maybe four or seven. But the second was pictographic drawings, in other words, and paintings. And I guess apples are a fairly easy fruit to draw. And so that's how it was rendered. And that's how the story got told colloquially. And since artists above everything else are thieves, pretty soon everybody was not only like depicting the fruit from the tree of knowledge as an apple, they were talking about it that way. That's how they were telling the story. And that's why apples are now so often used as symbols of like temptation. And another thing that's interesting about apples in that respect is they're always associated with school teachers. I don't know where this thing came from, but there is that old image of like a teacher with a pyramid of red apples on their desk. But since in the West we associate apples with that Bible story about the tree of knowledge and the forbidden fruit, that teachers who are tasked with imparting knowledge, the fruit from the tree of knowledge is the fruit that they've got on their desk, but also it implies that teachers are evil. I live in Florida. When I was in college, this is 2021, I met this guy who was in his late 20s. He was bald and he was stocky, but he compensated with like this very long goatee, and it went down off his chin like a horn. It was like 6 inches long, tellingly enough. He had a lot of issues. I don't think it was anything formidable, anything that warranted being afraid, but he used to like to tell people that his name was, whatever his name was, Daniel or something. He'd be like, yeah, my name is Daniel, but people call me Lucifer.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And then after he said that, he would like tuck his chin and smile, and he would wait for you to ask him why, which I hate to fucking do. I hate taking any kind of conversational bait. But it was clear with this guy, because we kept crossing paths at these coffee hours that my professor would host. But also like the way this dude conducted himself. People felt compelled to indulge his bullshit in conversation because he seemed so disturbed. But that was another layer of what was so frustratingly artificial and like inherently dishonest about this guy, is that he was trying to seem disturbed because obviously, having acted that way in the past, he saw this pattern where it made people more willing to indulge his little attention grabs because they were afraid he was gonna like fly off the handle if he didn't. So whatever, we're at this professor's coffee hours one day. This is like the third or fourth time that he has mentioned the Lucifer thing, that I can call him Daniel, his friends call him Lucifer. And so I took the bait, why do people call you Lucifer? And he kind of like cocked his head when I asked that, like he couldn't believe I didn't know. And he says to me, wow, so you don't even know what that word means, do you? Again, he's baiting me to ask, and I know he's loving this because his grin is getting wider, and he's leaning back in the chair now, and he's stroking his goatee until a little bit of pre-cum starts glinting out from the tip. And I said, no, what does it mean? The name Lucifer, when you break it down, the meaning of it, it means bringer of light. And he bounced his brows, and there was a little glint in his eye.
Twinkle, twinkle.
Because that's what Lucifer did. He brought knowledge. He led Adam and Eve out of the darkness of ignorance. And then he smiled even wider, and he left it at that. Because that was his profound thing that he had to say. That was the story behind his nickname. Telling me with a straight face that our contemporaries, people who were 18, 19, 20 years old at Florida International University, which, by the way, did not even have an entrance essay when I applied back in 2008. They just wanted to know, it was like a one-page questionnaire. They were like, what's your resting heart rate and your household income? And on the basis of that, you got in or you didn't. He's telling me with a straight face that, like, young people, people our age-ish, would just kneel before his goateed wisdom, and they all forged a consensus that, hey, you know who this guy reminds us of? Lucifer. You know, the bringer of light. Anyway, so I'm on Reddit this morning, and I'm reading all these comments from this dude who's got a PhD in religious studies, and I bought that Satan book, but I didn't start it. I just started thinking about, like, pursuing that line of study. Because obviously getting a PhD in any field is going to be difficult, but, like, to do it in religious studies seems particularly difficult, not just because you're reading ancient religious texts, and which means translations and comparing translations, which I'm sure is very interesting stuff. If you've got the right mind for it, if you've got the discipline to study it, all I can really think about are, like, the three or four metals I would rather put in my body. Want to know what I did study this week, successfully and enjoyably? Hostage and terrorist negotiation. So while it's a fairly hardline position for most major nations that they don't negotiate with terrorists, virtually all of them end up doing it, which is embarrassing, and that's why they don't really broadcast it. But according to this thing that I read by the International Institute of Applied Systems Analysis, it's also referred to by its acronym IASA, or EASA. They point out in one of their policy briefs, they're talking about negotiating with terrorists, and they're like, look, the act of negotiation is not itself the problem. The problem is the extent to which you find yourself maybe rewarding a terrorist for their act of terror. So in this construction, presented in a pamphlet form from EASA, there are two kinds of terrorists in a hostage situation: contingent terrorists and absolute terrorists. Contingent terrorists are willing to negotiate because their crime is going to be contingent on getting something that they want. And then there are absolute terrorists who, like, are just pure ideologues, and they're going to be either insulted by your attempt to negotiate with them, or they're going to use that negotiation branch as an opportunity to manipulate you. Negotiations emerge from, quote, mutually harmful stalemates. This is, like, the goal, apparently, or this is, like, the ground floor that you want to establish before you make any kind of deal. And the pamphlet points out that, like, while you're negotiating, the negotiator has to be kind of a dick. Like, they just have to maintain a firm hand, and they have to keep applying situational pressures to the terrorist, not just, you know, sort of saying, hey, whatever you want, we'll do whatever you want, don't hurt anyone. Because one of the necessary tenets for, like, reaching a safe and mutually beneficial conclusion is that the terrorist has to feel that they aren't simply negotiating to achieve something. They have to feel that they are negotiating with you in order to be relieved of some kind of pressure that you, the negotiator, are imposing on them. Negotiators do not negotiate belief systems. They do not negotiate ideological motives, political motives, spiritual motives. The negotiator is only there to discuss two things: means and ends. Negotiators cannot make strategic decisions. They are only allowed to facilitate decisions. So that's because of the risk, and apparently there's a lot of precedent for this, of a negotiator in, like, a 16 or 20 hour negotiation becoming emotionally involved with the terrorist through the phone. There's a guy named Chris Voss who made millions of dollars a few years ago because he used to be an FBI hostage negotiator, and he wrote a business book about how you could apply principles of hostage negotiation into the world of business. It's called Never Split the Difference, and it's about how you should treat the other side of a business negotiation like a pirate who's swinging a machete at hostages. And when they scream some huge demand, you're supposed to just ask them quietly, like, how am I supposed to do that? You say you want $10,000, I only have $40, and the bank is closed. I'm happy to get you what you want, you just need to tell me how to do it. And if the other side says, hey, that sounds like your problem, you figure it out. You're supposed to say to them, how am I supposed to figure it out? And so you just keep throwing questions at them, keep taking their statements and turning it around and echoing it back to them with a question mark. And apparently the book had a different title. In one of its earlier drafts, it was called How to Get Strangers Killed. But those kinds of things change in the drafting process. Any scholar will tell you, like, there's three versions of a text. There is the truth, there's the text, and there's the way that you read it. If you make yourself more social, you put yourself out there and you engage in conversation, you might just find sitting beside you the bringer of light.